Omaha Public Radio presents another program for Metropolitan Community College on Noon Forum. We'll hear a talk by former NFL football star and Omaha native Marlon the Magician Briscoe. He'll talk about his life growing up in Omaha, playing football for South High School and the University of Nebraska at Omaha, as well as his experiences after retiring from football in 1976. This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Monday evening, February 9, 2009, for broadcast at this time. The opinions expressed are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of Metropolitan Community College, KIOS-FM, or the Omaha Public School District. Here now to introduce the speaker is former teammate of Mr. Briscoe and a member of the UNO Football Hall of Fame, Roger Sayers.
I am very gratified and honored with this opportunity to introduce my friend of over 40 years. Marlon Briscoe grew up in South Omaha. In 1955, his uncle Bob Rose gave him a magic box which contained a basketball, football, and baseball glove. Parenthetically, let me add that Bob Rose was an OPS physical education instructor who was a mentor and a coach to many of the outstanding athletes in the Omaha area. And if you had the opportunity to know Bob, he was certainly an outstanding individual. And I can see where Marlon got his roots and his development. Marlon became a star in all three of the sports that Mr. Rose introduced him to, first leading his youth and high school teams to city championships and becoming a star quarterback at Omaha University. In 1968, Marlon was drafted into the NFL. Marlon was originally drafted to play defense for the Denver Broncos. However, after an injury to Denver's starting quarterback, he got the fateful opportunity to step into this position. And in true fashion, he made the most of it, breaking almost every rookie record in Bronco football history, many of which still remain today, and proving to the country that black quarterbacks can be successful. Without explanation, Marlon was released by the Denver Broncos prior to the 1969 season. He never played quarterback again. However, Marlon went on to the Buffalo Bills, where he became an all-pro wide receiver. He led Buffalo in touchdowns, catches for each of the three seasons he was with them, and twice he led the team in receptions. In 1971, Buffalo traded Marlon to the Miami Dolphins. There he led the undefeated 1972 Super Bowl champions in touchdown receptions and was the leading receiver on the 1973 Super Bowl team. Marlon made stops in San Diego and in Detroit before ending his career in 1976 with the New England Patriots. Despite his lifetime of success on the football field, Marlon's toughest opposition was against drugs and himself, a struggle that left him on the streets of L.A. and nearly took his life. Coming soon will be a film based on Marlon's remarkable story and his rise and redemption. I would like for you all to join me in welcoming a very, very great man and a great Omaha athlete, Marlon Briscoe.
Thank you, Omaha. Hello, Omaha. Hello. Hey, all right. You know, this is a great honor. I want to thank a lot of people because in success, you don't do it by yourself. In success, there are others that help you along the way. I was fortunate enough, first of all, to grow up in Omaha, Nebraska.
Amen.
Omaha, Nebraska helped me get through the successes and the failures as well. Growing up and learning the citizenship, the academics, the athletics, if I had not been raised in Omaha, Nebraska, a lot of the things that I was able to accomplish might not have occurred.
Amen.
I want to pay a special thanks to Roger Sayers. See, Roger was one of the best athletes Omaha has ever produced. And when I was, it's true. And when I was a freshman, and Roger was a senior, and we could ride on the bus, and I'd ride right next to Roger. And all the other players were thinking about the game plan and thinking about their opponent and whatever. And Roger would be sitting there with a book studying. And at that point, I realized why I was in school. I was in school to get an education. And Roger was my mentor. I don't think he even knows that. And he influenced me so much as a student athlete in college. It's immeasurable what he means to me. Plus, he put me over as a fraternity brother, and that paddle got a little thick to me. Roger also could wield a bat and a base and a paddle, but I really appreciate Roger Sayers, what he has done. I want to say a special thanks to the teachers and the coaches that helped me along the way as a young lad growing up 3 blocks from here in the projects of South Omaha. I have some friends of mine that live right down the few doors from me that are here, and they vividly remember how we grew up in South Omaha as a melting pot community, which boded well for me later on in life, enabling me to understand other cultures. And when I became a professional football player, especially quarterback, dealing with other ethnic groups at that level was paramount to any success that I would have as a black quarterback. Let's get started on how this journey started. As I said before, it started 3 blocks away. We had the black projects, and then there were the white projects right across the street. And we never understood why, you know, we could not play with the white kids after we got out of school. Now, while we were in school, we meshed greatly. While we were on the playgrounds, in classes, we studied together. But somehow, when we got back to our own neighborhoods, we had to stay in our own neighborhoods. And the relationships that we formed as young people carried on until we got into high school, and as the years progressed, we learned more about each other. See, the packing house used to be right here where we stand. Right here where we stand. And a lot of our fathers, mothers, people from all over, from Europe, came here to work in a packing house, as did, you know, my relatives. That's why I moved to Omaha in the first place. It was a great experience to grow up in this environment and learn what you needed to learn in terms of education, getting along with other groups, and forming relationships that will last forever. How did I start playing quarterback? Well, let's take a look back in time. It started with a bully who used to chase me home. And, you know, I wasn't afraid of him, but I just didn't like to fight. So it happened about 3 times, and my mother got tired of it. So Bob Rose, he doubled as a teacher, and he worked at the packing house. And after he leave his job at the packing house, he would come over and rest before he would go back home to North Omaha. So she told Bob, she said, "Marlon, he just won't stand up for himself. You know, this kid chases him home, and you know, he runs in the door. I feel like shutting the door on him, making him fight." And so Bob, he came over to the house one day, and he came up to me and he thumped me upside the head. That was his signature. He had to, he could thump you. He wouldn't miss that temple. Hey, sad sack. That was his signature saying. Sad sack. That's what he would call you when he got mad at you. You know, Rogers. You know what I'm talking about. And he said, I'm going to come back over the next day, and I'm going to get something for you. And I'm going to go through a series of tests with you. And when you get through with these series of tests, you will never run from anybody again, I promise you. So the next day, he used to be at Howard Kennedy as a teacher. So he brought over this box of a box full of balls, baseball, basketball, football, and some boxing gloves. You forgot that one, right? And he said, now I'm going to sit over, I'm going to teach you how to play each one of these sports to get your confidence up. And if I ever hear of you running from this kid again, then you'll get another sad sack. Well, we went through a progression of sports, starting with baseball, and we went football, basketball, and then football. Well, as we went through the progression, and I started to find out that this stuff came easy for me. But I worked at it, but it did come easy for me. And I began to get more confidence in myself. So one day, the bully chased me. He started to chase me. And it ended up, I started chasing him. So Bob was such an influential force in my life, as was Roger, Gale Sayers, Ron Boone, Mike McGee, Johnny Rogers. He had all of us at a time when we needed discipline, at a time that we could have been getting in trouble, but he wouldn't allow it. He had us when we needed the basics. And I can't say enough about Bob Rose. He's no longer with us physically, but in spirit, he will never be forgotten. Well, I decided that I liked football better than the other sports. And he had taught me how to, you know, the physical motions of throwing football. So in the project, Terry Williams, he knows about this little grass area we had in front of the house. They've torn our building down. But there was this little tree. So I would go out there and start throwing at the tree. Now I started missing. And I was missing. And then all of a sudden, I started hitting the tree. And I always thought that I was Johnny Unitas because there were no black quarterbacks in the league. And I even had the high-top shoes. And so I would pretend like the tree was Raymond Berry. And pretty soon, I started hitting the tree on a regular basis. Well, my neighbors thought I was nuts because I'm out here in the snow. You know, you get cold out there. The weather like this, I'd still be out there throwing at the tree. And the neighbor said, Miss Briscoe, your son is kind of gone, you know. But nonetheless, that's how I started out wanting to be a quarterback. There were no black quarterbacks in the National Football League. But the one constant I did have is the fact that Sandy Stevens and Wilburn Hollis, who's from Omaha, he was from Boys Town, quarterback at Iowa, he was visible in our neighborhood. So those are the heroes that I had in terms of a black quarterback. And therefore, I would try to emulate them. They were very good players. Well, that's when I decided I can do this. I can play quarterback. So when we had Little League tryouts, I decided to go out for Little League team. And Simon A. Simon was the coach at the time. He was a Greek guy and had no prejudice at all in his body. But when I went up there, and you had to line up at different positions, He said, okay, the receivers over here, running backs over here, guards over here, defensive backs over here, quarterbacks over here. So this little pudgy, big butt, little black boy, myself, jumps into the quarterback line. So he says, hey, son, don't you think you ought to go into the receiver line, or what about the running back line? I said, no, coach, I'm a quarterback. So he kind of looked at me and said, well, okay, because no black kid had ever jumped in that line. So we had all the drills and everything else, and after the drills were over, the foot drills and passing drills, he looked at his coach and said, quarterback. And I thank Simon A. Simon for initially giving me that opportunity to prove, you know, that I could play the position. Of course, it was a single wing, but he still was, you know, still the quarterback. So that's how I saw far back it goes. And we're playing the one time that I really wanted to improve my skills as a football player was when Gail ran me over down out of Boys Town, and I started crying because he ran me over. Not because I was hurt, it's because I didn't stop him. But nobody else did either. And I vowed that nobody else would ever run me over. Of course they did, but that was an experience that, you know, I savor because he did make me a better player. Both Roger and Gale in the same backfield in Pop Warner League, it was awesome. It was scary. Well, along the way, I was able to hone my skills and got involved in other sports, basketball. But more than that, education was stressed in South Omaha. Later on in life, I worked in the packing house here, and I guarantee you, that let me know that I needed to go to college. Being, as I was growing up here in South Omaha, going to South High, that was a time that I started playing quarterback on a regular basis, sharing quarterback duties with a guy named Joe Baroness. And he would play a half, and I would play a half. But I never did start an entire game most of the time at South High. But they gave me an opportunity to play the position. During my senior year, they switched me to running back. And we beat Sandy Buddha. Sandy, 19-0, was that the score? 19-0. 19-0. And switching positions, at that position, I made All-City. My neighborhood at the time thought that it was a racial move to have me move from quarterback to running back, but it was for the good of the team. It had nothing to do with being biased. And so I learned at that point, you play for the good of the team, not yourself. Then we had the Shrine Game, and we played against a much more favored team, the North High team, which featured Bob Churchick, and they had Ricky Davis and Rick Taylor, Danny Miller. They had an awesome team. But we had the late Bill Dodd, who was instrumental in this school. And he was the most valuable player. He ran all over the North, and we won. And so we won the Shrine Game, and all of our I thought that I was going to get a scholarship to Nebraska, excuse me. But it never happened because there were no black quarterbacks at Nebraska. And I'm not downing Nebraska. It's just the way it was. But Al Coniglia gave me that opportunity. He told me after that game, you can play quarterback for me. And he kept his promise. He kept his promise. And I look back upon my career from Little League football all the way to college. Not one time did they call me a black quarterback. It was always a quarterback. And not one time did I hear that word used. And That mindset is the mindset that I used to carry over into pro ball. Although the world said I was a black quarterback, I could not go into the NFL with the attitude that I was a black quarterback. I wouldn't put that kind of burden on myself, because the pressure of just being a quarterback alone is enough. Now, I knew the significance of it, but I never let that be something that would distract me from the duties at hand, which is winning in the National Football League. Let me tell you how, after college, I made All-American, let me back up a little bit. I want to express this to you young people. My junior year, which would have been my senior year, I was playing basketball at a charity basketball game in North Omaha. And a guy went up under me, and I fractured my neck. And I was told I would never play sports again in my life. They said my career as an athlete was over. And at that point, I realized that your career could be over in a flash, just like that. I had things that were looking good for me, in terms of athletics, and particularly football, and it was taken away from me. At that point, I had to decide that I needed to get my degree. And that's what I'm telling you fellows out there, you never know. Players get injured. You go to school to get your degree. No matter how good you are, anything can happen to you. And you get your degree and move on with your life. Well, somehow, miraculously, my neck recalcified. I got a hardship case and ended up making All-American that year and then getting drafted by the Denver Broncos. I got drafted in the 14th round as a defensive back, and I told the Denver Broncos brass that I would play corner, but you got to give me a 3-day trial at quarterback. Now, I'm a 14th round draft choice. Lou Saban thought I was nuts. I mean, how is a 14th round draft choice going to dictate, a contract with professional football? And they weren't going to budge. But finally, and I wasn't going to budge. So finally they said, okay, we'll give you a 3-day trial. Because I know Denver at the time was one of the only teams in the NFL that had their practices there in the city. So the reporters and media and the fans could observe the practice. So they finally gave me, they acquiesced to my demands. And there were 8 quarterbacks in camp. And we each got, each quarterback got 10 throws. And I would always be the one in the back. And when it came time for me to get my throws, I'd only get 5. And I knew it wasn't going to be a level playing field, but nevertheless, I made the best of every throw that I had, and particularly the long ones. I'm not bragging anything, but they said I had an ooh-wee arm. And I'd wait till the receiver got out of sight and launch it down there on the money. And the fans and the media started saying, who's that little kid from Omaha? And once the media started giving me kudos and everything, they hurried up and got me out of there, put me a defensive back. Well, in the meantime, a lot of things unfolded. Steve Tensley, the starting quarterback, got hurt. 4 of the quarterbacks that were in that group of eight could not do the job. So the fans and the media start getting on the Bronco brass, and so the media was talking about, well, why don't you let the little guy play? And Saban reluctantly, refused. So I knew that they needed a quarterback because we weren't scoring. The quarterbacks were inept at that point. So I go to my locker room, and I open the locker, and there's number 15 in my locker. So I thought I was cut. You know, I knew they needed a quarterback, so I thought I was cut. And they put somebody, number 15, in my locker. And so I was getting ready to come home and teach school. And I turned around, and Lou Saban said, "Did you see number 15 in your locker?" I said, "Well, yes, sir." He said, "Well, you're not a quarterback." And I was hurt at the time, man. My leg got healed and heart stopped down. And so I was given an opportunity and made the best of it. First start, people didn't realize that not only was it the first black quarterback, the first black center started that game too. But they were so focused on, you know, the quarterback position that they didn't even realize that Walt Highsmith, our center, was the first black center. See, back in those days, you know, there were certain positions that you couldn't play. They wouldn't let blacks play. The thinking man's position, center, middle linebacker, free safety, and obviously quarterback.
I didn't know that.
And, yeah, and Willie Lanier proved that, you know, blacks could play that position because they felt that you couldn't think. You know, you couldn't think on that level. We proved that, particularly in 1968, that was 40 years ago, we proved that a black man could think, throw, and lead on that level. That was always management's fear, is that the fans would not show up, the media would castigate the player. A lot of the players on the line back in those days were white players from the South. They had never played with a black quarterback, but they had never played in college. They never played with blacks, period. So to win over their respect on the field was a huge coup. Not only did you have to win over the white players, you had to win over the black players and the fans, everybody. And in 1968, we proved that we can do that without being judged unfairly. We have, threw 14 touchdown passes in something like seven games, and that record still stands today. I was runner-up for Rookie of the Year and proved that we could do this. Had I not succeeded, it would have taken a long time before another black quarterback would get an opportunity. In 1969, even though I didn't play the position but 1 year, James Harris, Henry Jackson, and another quarterback were drafted as quarterbacks the next year in 1969. I was treated unfairly, so everybody says, because the next year I wasn't even invited to the quarterback meetings. They were holding quarterback meetings behind my back. And eventually, you know, I was released. Let's look at 1968 and the significance of that year. It's probably the most volatile year in the history of this country. Dr. King was killed. Bobby Kennedy was killed. John Carlos and Tommy Smith gave the Black Power sign in the Olympics in Mexico City. You had the Vietnam War. Hey, Bob Gibson won the Cy Young Award that year. There were a lot of things happening in 1968 in this country that was mind-boggling. And I don't know if another year that had a year of change like that. So 1968, for a black quarterback to break the color barrier, was appropriate for that, you know, to happen in that year. in the next year, 1969, I had to switch positions, a position I had never played in my life, on a playground, in grade school, high school, wide receiver. I never played the position, and I had to make the Buffalo Bills team as a wide receiver in 14 days. 14 days. Impossible, but it happened. And that's why I want to preface to you young people. Sometimes life's not fair, and even if you do well, you might not get rewarded for it right now. But you can never give up. You can never, ever give up. If I would have given up and said, okay, you won't let me play quarterback, I'm going home. That wasn't an option. I believed in myself. You got to believe in yourself and roll up your sleeves and dare to be great. Dare to be resilient. Dare to fight. Well, it all ended up real well for me. I had two Super Bowl rings, a history-making achievement, money in the bank, and I had my health when I retired from football in 1976. And then I let my guard down. I found a defensive back that I couldn't beat. I found a linebacker that I couldn't beat. And that was drugs. I let my guard down thinking that I was invincible and that nothing could overtake me. But I was wrong. Drugs turned my life upside down, inside out. I lost everything. I lost my family. I lost my home. I lost my money. I lost my rings. But more than that, I lost myself. I lost my dignity within myself. Nobody that I grew up with would ever think that I would get involved with drugs. Most particularly myself. But you know, it can happen to anybody. It can happen to anybody. And I want you to know that that was the most difficult thing that I have ever had to overcome. Now, I've overcome a lot. Broken neck, racism at the position, having to go through the civil rights era as a young man, like we all did, but we grew out of it. But overcoming drugs was my stiffest test. I had over a 10-year battle with cocaine. Almost took my life. Ruined my ties with my family and my friends. But you know what? There were a lot of friends that stuck with me for all those years. It seemed like they just knew at one point that I was going to overcome. I knew it. I just didn't know when.
Amen.
You have an opportunity to make something yourself. You know, I run a Boys and Girls Club in Long Beach. And, you know, we have some glaring problems in our society. And the media sometimes, labels our young people in unfair terms, because we got some great young people. We got some great young people. I just wish that everybody in this room will support our government and our new president, because he has a daunting task ahead of him. The one thing about being the first, you know, everybody will remember the first, you know, not the second. They always remember the first. And I did an interview with the Washington Post, and I raised some eyebrows with some of the interviews that I did when I compared and paralleled what President Obama faced and what I faced as being the first black quarterback. And I said, well, the parallels are right there. And he looked at me, you know, kind of strange. I said, let me explain. The quarterback is the president on the football field. The quarterback, particularly before 1968, was a much revered position of power, position, you know, of strength, position of stardom, too, to believe. And, you know, you had your players around you were your supporters, just like President Obama, and being the leader of our country, because that position is held in such high esteem. We have an opportunity as young people now to want to believe, want to achieve. When I was coming up, black kids didn't say, I want to be president of the United States. Young ladies didn't say they wanted to be the president of the United States, because it was out of reach back then. But it's not now. Breaking the color barrier in the NFL, now we have a plethora of black quarterbacks playing. They don't call them black quarterbacks anymore. When they make a mistake, they just call them, you know, that dumb quarterback. You know. But, you know, we have failure was not an option for me, because I didn't take myself as a black quarterback, and I don't think President Obama is going into office as a black president. He's going into office as our president. I want to, you know, thank Omaha for raising me, and my friends who stuck by me in both the best of times and the worst of times. I want to thank all of my teachers and coaches and a mother who I still have. And I just want to thank Omaha and this community for guiding me and sticking with me. And this is a very special moment in my life. I'll cherish it forever. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to a program from the Metropolitan Community College Lecture Series on Noon Forum. We've heard a talk by former NFL football star and Omaha native Marlon the Magician Briscoe. This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Monday evening, February 9th, 2009, for broadcast at this time. Special thanks to Sheila O'Connor, Director of Marketing and Public Relations at Metropolitan Community College, for helping to make the recording and broadcast of this program possible. Complete Noon Forum listings are available on the Internet. Visit our website at kios.org. Now, this is your producer and host, Bob Cote, thanking you for listening.